T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Joe Madden.
He's got that flair about him. When his name's announced, the place erupts all the time, but he's always in the middle of something good.
Manager for the Chicago Cubs.
And then Cliff and Shelley, the Penguins. I mean, all this stuff, the Penguins, like, pooped all over. They poop every 15 minutes, apparently. That's what Penguins do. All over the brand-new rug on the other side. That's what's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, I learned a lot from watching Joe.
Joe Madden with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Okay, nice.
Joe Madden joins me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. I am Lawrence Holmes, and every Tuesday at noon, we get the opportunity to talk with the manager of your Chicago Cubs. You can follow him on Twitter at CubsJoeMad. And Joe Madden now joins me here on The Score. What's up, Joe?
Good afternoon, Lawrence. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. It was good to see you yesterday. Got a chance to kick it in the press conference a little bit and see what was going on. But before the game, before I get started and into the baseball stuff, I just wanted to tell you, I walked, after I left Wrigley yesterday, I went into Madden's post because I wanted to check it out, and I loved it. I loved all of the classic photos that were in there. How much were you involved in the look of the place?
Actually, a lot. You know, the design team came to Hazleton last two Christmases ago. And we drove around in my station wagon, and we went to some of the bright spots, like Bellhop's, which has been there, from 1930-something, I think. And then we went from Bellhop's to the Oval Lawn. We also went to Snaps. It was literally Snaps is there almost from the turn of the century. And at Bottlenecks in West Hazleton, took them around and showed them what I kind of liked. And Tony was there, of course, too. We sampled all the different bar foods and told them I like that salad at Madden's Post. The antipasto salad is pretty much what it looks like back home from Bellhop's. We jazzed it up a bit. So, and then when it came to the colors, the design, the fabrics, all the 70s kind of vibe in the Flamingo Room, all of that, the girls were really great. We talked a lot, and we put it together. So I was really pleased with the outcome. I thought they did a wonderful job, and I think as people show up, they're gonna enjoy it also.
It's right on the corner of Waveland and Clark. If you want to check it out before you head over to Wrigley, maddenspost.com is where you can check it all out. Now, yesterday you said after the game that this was Darvish's best start. Why was that the case?
I thought he was in total control of himself out there, command of his pitches, command of himself. He looked very confident. Stuff was outstanding. Fastball command was better with up to 96, 97. The slider cutter was where he wanted it to be, to a couple good splits. He was just like totally in control of Yu Darvish yesterday, and that's what I saw. And as we move this thing forward, the more we see of that, the more we're going to like it, because his stuff, top 10, top maybe even 5 stuff in all of baseball, is just coming out of his hand. And as he gets more confidence in himself, man, heads up, because that's what it could look like. Listen, ground ball up the middle and a loop on the right field line. Stuff happens in our game, just like the conclusion of yesterday, but I thought he was outstanding.
What do you think the crowd support meant to him? Because he had kind of circled this start, saying that he needed to have a good start at Wrigley Field, and there are a lot of people behind him last night as he continued and gave you a quality start.
I think it means a lot to him. I've gotten to know him, obviously, over the last couple of years. He's really a thinker, man. Takes everything and dissects it according to his bringing up, which I appreciate. I'm the same way. So getting to understand and know him and what a deep thinker he actually is, and he really cares, man. This guy cares about everything, actually. He's a wonderful human being. I like him a lot. And as he pitches here in this market, he's learning to how to adjust to this and be a Chicago Cub and pitch in Chicago with this wonderful ballpark and fan base and everything about it. He's not from Hazleton, PA. He's from Japan, and he's got a different background, and so he's learning, and he's adjusting, and I really appreciate that about him, and I think he's going to continue to get better.
How did Caratini do receiving him?
Wonderfully. Vic does a great job. I think, again, you could watch it from the side. I thought his pitch calling was outstanding. We might have disagreed once or twice all night. Victor is, and you saw Victor's line drive up the middle. You saw his patient approach at the plate. Victor's a good baseball player. And as he's also very young, and he just needs more time back there. But I thought Vic did a wonderful job.
What was it like for you to have Jake Arrieta back in the ballpark?
Well, I love it. I mean, Jake and I are good. He and I hit it off in the beginning. Again, the fact that one of the rules I had, one of my few rules, is that if you wanted to wear sandals on an airplane, you had to paint your toenails. And of course, Jake walked on one day with painted toenails, and that said it all to me. That's my kind of guy. So. He and I could hang out anytime. I love the way he competes. He's a different cat, the way he just approaches everything, and I appreciate everything about him. So I'm upset that we didn't win the game, but as Jake continues to move forward for him and his family, I just wish him nothing but the best.
In the pregame, you had talked about the blackout game against Pittsburgh and the wild card game. So Why was that such an important moment for not just the Cubs overall, but Jake as an individual?
Well, I mean, that put him in another stratosphere, put us in another element there. We just not had been there in a long time. And listen, winning a wild card game is not easy. I don't want to say it's not any fun, because if that's the only alternative, I'll take it, but very difficult. And against a really good Pittsburgh team, I think they won 98 games, we won 97. So that there, I think for him, elevated him internally, mentally, that he knows he could pitch that well under those circumstances. And for us as an organization to be able to accelerate our ascension by being able to do that was very large. So that particular moment, like I said, really stands out. And his game in Minnesota, I think it was an 8-0 shutout, complete game. I thought that really put him on his way, too.
I thought that was a nice moment when he came to the plate and got the standing ovation from the Wrigley Field crowd. I understand that you're in it. You're there managing. You know these people. But do those moments even get to you?
I don't know that they get to me, but I appreciate them. There might be a time that it would be. I mean, I'm really emotional. I cry easily, so I'll concede that. But like yesterday, I was just happy for the moment. And I was really proud of you, Darvish. I mean, you stepped back. I don't know if everybody noticed that, but you stepped back behind the mound and let Jake have his moment. And I thought the whole thing was well played. Well played, deserved. Jake will always be a big part of Chicago history. He's iconic here in regards to what he did, the year that he had. So I thought the moment was outstanding.
Cubs manager Joe Maddon joining me here on The Score as we talk about his first place squad. Let's talk about check swings, Joe.
Oh, my God.
What's your opinion on how check swings should be called?
Well, I mean, I think there needs to be research done. And, I mean, weirdly, when you talk about technology, they want to reinstitute the strike zone. I don't want that. I think there's going to be a lot of unintended consequences there that aren't going to be good. I don't think it's going to benefit the hitters as much as the hitters think. And with the check swing, I mean, technology-wise, there's got to be a method from an angle to determine, you know, how to laser when a bat exceeds a certain spot. I don't even understand why. I'm thinking that even implanting a chip in the head of every bat somehow that would permit this to be enacted. So that's the one part that really annoys me more than anything, is the subjectiveness of check swings. Every umpire is different. I don't blame them. I mean, they all see it differently. I'm not banging on Hunter from last night at all. It's a really tough play for them to make it, especially when a hitter uses a dark bat at night. You could hardly see the end of the bat. I've noticed that from the time dark bats came out in the minor leagues. You could hardly see the end in a check swing. So it's a really difficult play. Make that one easier. Don't worry about the strike zone. Don't worry about an electronic strike zone. Let's do something about check swings.
When I heard you talking about the subjectivity of it, I thought back to being younger and how almost all of us have a different definition of what a check swing is. I mean, I remember being told, you know, if guys break their wrist, then it's an actual swing, or it's where the bat head, if the bat head crosses the plate. So what did you grow up believing a check swing was?
Well, breaking the wrist, I mean, that's obviously, if a guy breaks his wrist, he's probably swinging the bat anyway. The check swing for me is when the bat head exceeds home plate. That's what I see. And if a guy's able to prevent the bat head from crossing the front of the plate, to me, then he's checked the swing. if the bat head at all exceeds the front of the plate, like that perpendicular line coming up from the plate, then he swung. That's it. I don't, like, sometimes I think a lot of these umpires are reading when the body moves forward and the wrists still stay in the back position and the bat head never exceeds that point, they're calling that a swing. And, again, it's in the eye of the beholder, man. Umpires are going to call it differently. That's not going to change until we get to the point where we could actually – that's the technology, man. Figure out that technology. We got something, I think.
Since we're talking about rules, what was the point you were trying to get across in your initial protest of Sean Doolittle's motion?
Well, it was all about Carl Edwards. That's all that was about. First of all, I don't like the rule. I think it's not necessary. But it was enacted upon us in spring training. And so if my guy is going to be impacted by it, why would I permit another guy and another team to be able to do it? So, you know, it was not about Sean Doolittle. He's very good. He's a very good pitcher, and my intent was not to mess with him. My intent was to mess with MLB based on the inconsistency with the rule. So I was out there to protect Carl, pure and simple. And regardless, you know, semantically, what is the truth? What is real? I don't know. We could have that philosophical discussion for the next 2 hours. But when I got the definition back from MLB, I'm saying, no, it's not right. I mean, grazing, touching, tapping, foot down, doesn't matter. If your foot actually comes back to the ground in any way, shape, even if the spike grazes it, then you've tapped it again. So it's weirdly, it's almost, it has to be written in a court of law somehow by a bunch of lawyers to try to disseminate the language, because to me it's wrong. What Doolittle did is tantamount to what Carl had done, and you can't like splice the language based on whether it just grazed or not.
Were you expecting that Doolittle would have the reaction that he's had to it?
Meaning, I think he's kind of like come back a little bit, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I you figured that a guy is going to be a little salty thinking that you're playing mind games with him instead of you're trying to make a larger point than just what was going on in that particular game.
Yeah, with all due respect, it wasn't about Doolittle at all. Not at all. He could have been any one of their pitchers doing it. It didn't matter. It could have been their worst pitcher, their best pitcher. It didn't matter. It was just about the moment, the event itself. So I have no issue. Hey, Doolittle, he's a sharp guy. I've heard him on TV. I've heard him speak. I've read his stuff. He's a sharp guy. I really like him. You know, he's my kind of guy. But no, it had nothing to do with him at all. He was just a vehicle.
How's Javi doing?
Well, he's not going to start today. I'm going to find out when I get there. He was still sore yesterday. I need to just get a little bit more detail from the trainers today. But he's not awful by any means, but it's just something we really want to be careful with so that does not become prolonged. This guy's way too valuable for us over the course of an entire season to worry about one game in May. So I'll know more when I get in there, but I'm not starting him as of right now.
And you had said yesterday that you had planned a scheduled day off for him in this series. With a guy like that who plays 100 miles an hour, what's your strategy in getting him to understand, look, we need you, even though we want to play you 162, we got to get you your days off?
I just talk to him. My guys are great. I mean, we have great conversations. It's wide open right now, and I'm so, like, I don't know how many times I've told you how much I'm enjoying this. So I've already had that conversation with him about taking him out of bad games. I said, I just want to get you off your feet whenever I can. And with these longs, early in the season, all that was taken care of, whether it was him or Contreras, the days off took care of both of them. I wasn't really that concerned. But now we get to those points where the days off aren't as frequent, so you have to manufacture it somehow. So I was going to give him the last game off on Thursday. That was going to be his day off day game after a night game. But right now, if he's well to play tomorrow, we'll just let him go because he would have had 2 days off. But I don't know where this is at yet. But guys that play, like Rizzo, you got to watch later, a little bit later on in the year. Contreras, my rule is like 3 and done, but this one was 4. The last one was 4 before he had yesterday off. Those are those 3 guys. And KB is an outlier, man. I don't know. He may need a day off once in a while, but he's a different animal, man. He's so athletically gifted. He really does not like or want days off. So I really have to keep track of him, too.
For sure. I mean, a lot of these guys, they're alphas, and they want to be out there trying to help you do whatever it is you can. Every time I see Descalso, I just, when I'm watching games and making notes, I go, that's a Joe guy. Am I right about that Descalso's your type of dude?
Oh yeah, I'd hang out with him in a heartbeat. I played with guys like that all the way through. Again, you got, you know, in, from my perspective, conversationally, I'm like I said, conversation's wonderful with everybody. With him, it takes a different layer to it. It's just that he's so he's just such a grown up. So, you know, you're able to really have a normal conversation with him. He gets it. He knows what you're doing and why you're doing it. He has no ego regarding himself in regard to, of course, he wants to be successful. But it's all about team with this guy. This guy's a winner. He's a proven winner. He's not hitting like he can right now, but he will. And he's actually playing a really good second base. You're right. He is my kind of player.
When you're trying to juggle all of that, where you're trying to make sure you get enough innings for Addison, get enough innings mm-hmm. for Descalso, how do you approach that with those guys and saying, look, you're on my mind. I am trying to make sure that you get what you need.
Yeah, again, that's daily. I you know, with Addison right now, Addison's kind of like been the lowest on a totem pole, but he's really starting to come around. He's hitting, the ball's coming off the bat hot. He looks really good at shortstop right now. Addison could not be handling the moment better. I just, again, with the handling the lineups out in advance, I think that helps them mentally, prep-wise, and they know when they're going to play in advance. So they know that it's not based on did I have a good day or a bad day the day before. They know that. They know that it's laid out in advance. I'm trying to, like you're saying, parcel out time and try to match them up as well as I can. So they've been wonderful about it.
Quintana will go for you tonight. He wasn't as sharp, and not every start can be a perfect game, but what corrections are you hoping that he makes in tonight's start from the last one?
Well, I hope that it's not raining like it was in Cincinnati. It was a tough day to pitch. He was going so well, not unlike Kyle was the other day, going well. Then I mean that last when they got those couple runs before the rain came down, it was pretty nasty out there, and he's sliding a little bit. And listen, these are the things my guys are not gonna make excuses about. I love it. I love that we don't make excuses, and even though we know that there might be an underlying cause. So I listen, he's going to go out there. He's going to let it roll like he normally does. I just like when he incorporates his changeup and curveball a little bit more often, which he's been doing. But the other night, he was going good until the weather got kind of nasty on him.
Cishek's performance on Sunday night, my goodness, like watching that guy be able to really do an old-school save for you, how important was that for the rest of the guys in the pen?
It was very large. We needed that moment. He knew that before the game. We told him two innings. It ended up being two and a third. He came out. You could see the assertiveness. He knew he's going more than one. He knew that. So what is he's attacking the strike zone. He's not playing around. He didn't have like a 20-pitch inning. He had after the little base hit, I think he ended up with 20. I thought he would be good between 30 and 35 on that night. And, you know, we did have Ryan warming up, and then I think we had one after that possibly. But this, it's juggling this the bullpen right now, giving them all opportunity and not trying to overwork anybody. It's kind of a juggling act right now. And he was wonderful. Listen, Brad Brock was outstanding last night. Wow. That's the best I've seen stuff out of his hand. A little bit unfortunate you're talking about on the check swing, but again, a little blooper over the first baseman Zed. I thought that was by far the best stuff I've seen out of Brad Brock also.
Let me go back to Javi for a second. Sure. On Sunday's broadcast, Alex Rodriguez was talking about that fielder's choice that got you the first run Sunday night, and Javi mm-hmm. was sliding into first base. What's mm-hmm. your feelings on sliding into first base?
I prefer you run through the bag. It's normally more efficient and normally is going to prevent the injury that the dive's going to cause. When you're in a competitive moment like that, you lose all of that kind of thought process. You want to be safe. You're just trying to be safe. And there might be a time too if the first baseman's coming off the bag to catch the ball towards the home plate area, that you might feel that the dive or slide is more effective just to make sure he doesn't tag you also. So if runner is trying to avoid a potential tag, I get it. But if he's not, it's always better. And the thing that's really underrated is hitting the front edge of the bag. You got to hit the front edge of the bag, not hit the top of the bag. In spring training, you practice this all the time when guys are running the first base. Derek Jeter was one of the best I've ever seen at that. Always hitting the front edge of the bag, which gets you there a click sooner, safer out.
Okay, now, Joe, you're going to win this game that we're going to play because you're the pro here.
Okay.
But around, I'm going to ask my crew in a little bit, but I'm just curious, who's the best player that you played against and that you sat there, you went, oh, my God, like that, you can tell that this person is special.
Wow. Ricky Henderson stands out in the Cal League in 1977, I think. Ricky obviously was pretty good. I played with Tony Gwynn. I mean, Tony was obviously outstanding. I played with Tony in Boulder. And so playing with, I'd say Tony and, Tony was pretty darn, and Ricky, probably two of the best I've played with or against.
All right, Tony, do you have a guy that you, because Tony, you were a high school basketball star. Who was the basketball player that made you look?
Jabari Parker.
Okay, far, yeah. That's pretty good. that's pretty good. Rick Camp, you got one?
Not that I played against, but I witnessed Candace Parker play high school basketball and dunk on a couple people from my high school.
That's pretty good too. I've got Cliff Floyd and Pat Fitzgerald. Pat Fitzgerald was the scariest person I'd ever seen on a football field.
Really?
And Cliff Floyd hit a ball that I'm pretty sure is still going.
Well, Cliff hit those low liners that just climbed. It's like a 737 taking off. He was incredible.
Absolutely. He was a terror. As a sophomore catcher, seeing that guy walk up with an aluminum bat was a terrifying prospect, and he was unbelievable.
Well, Ricky broke the California League record stealing bases while I was catching. I had thrown him out earlier in the game at second base, but then he beat me at third base. And he was actually, you know, that good even back then. He had the power, he had the speed. And then I actually worked with him a bit with the Angels in the late 90s. An incredible talent.
Joe, as always, I appreciate the conversation. I will see you at the ballpark soon.
You guys do well. Thanks again. See ya.
That's Joe Madden. Follow him on Twitter at Cubs Joe Mad, and go check out his restaurant. It looks pretty dope, man. I walked in there and everyone was like, I just wanted to check it out. And you see the people like enjoying pierogies and all sorts of other stuff. It was tremendous.
How swaggy was Ricky Henderson, though?
Man, super swaggy. I love that Joe put in there. You know, I did throw him out once. I love that.
I had one that I don't know the guy's name. This is like playing at the rec at NIU. The guy had, it looked like just his old ABCD camp jersey. So, you know, you're kind of on alert anyway.
Because
it's the elite players that go there. This guy is like 6'1" maybe. And he's coming down the lane. I stupidly step up. Hands, you know, I'm about to put my hands up, thinking he's going to try and go around me, and he accelerates in my direction and goes over me and dunked on me.
Who was this guy?
I have no idea what his name was, just a guy I played with at the rec.
And let me just – we used to play noon ball when I was at DePaul, like you do your pickup games back in the old alumni hall. Let me give a special shout-out to Kim Williams from Marshall, because she was on DePaul's women's team, and she would play with us and just light dudes up. Like, you talk about – like fast with the ball in their hands, she was like a blur and no one could guard her. Like, just one of the dopest players I've ever seen in my life. Like, every time I'd be like, no, because, you know, I'm little. So people are like, well, you guard the point guard. No, not guarding Kim Williams. Screw that noise.
That was Stephanie Raymond, point guard of the NIU basketball team. She was tough.
Absolutely. All right. Great stuff with Joe. Great stuff from the crew. Jabari Parker, eh?
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Brings back a lot of memories of what we were able to do as a team from the end of 13 all the way through 17. So felt good to pitch here again. Really, really enjoyed the opportunity. Missed both series against these guys last year, but it was a lot of fun. It really was.
Phillies pitcher and Cubs great, Jake Arrieta. talking about being back at Wrigley Field and what it was like for him last night going up against Yu Darvish. Can I just say, I ran across this in talking with a lot of people who cover the team yesterday. I want Yu Darvish to do well. And hearing from the people that are around him every day that this is a good guy who's respectful and really, really wants to be liked by Cubs fans. I thought it was cool yesterday when he was getting stuff done and he's striking people out and he's coming off the mound and the fans are cheering, "You!" And he seemed to be good with it last night. It was nice. It was a fun game to watch, even though it didn't end up the way most Cubs fans would have hoped that it ended up. There was one particular moment that I thought was tremendous, and I wanted to talk a little bit about it. And it was as Jake Arrieta took his first at-bat back at Wrigley Field.
Here's Jake, Silver Slugger winner, 2016.
Nice response from the Cub fans. Getting louder. Stepped out. Interesting. Darvish took a few steps behind the mound, too, as if to say, take your time, Jake. Enjoy the moment.
Highlight courtesy of NBC Sports Chicago. JD's right. Darvish understood what was going on. He clearly, I mean, he had talked about last week how important Jake Arrieta was to the Cubs. And I thought it was great. I think there were a lot of people that were like, oh, it's Jake. We haven't seen him. We need to appreciate him. And if you were listening to Transition, was it yesterday or maybe, yeah, yesterday with Spiegel, I was talking about the idea of Jake Arrieta being one of the greatest Cubs. And I know it's weird because you're only talking about 4 years of him being a Cub. But considering that there's a Cy Young in there and a World Series and he was instrumental, and then there was the portion of his career where he was Bob Gibson, that season's worth of starts where Jake Arrieta turned into Bob Gibson, that I think that it's really fair to call him one of the greatest Cubs ever, even though it's not the way that we probably draw that stuff up, which is you draft a guy, the guy plays for you for 15 years, he gets to be on your Walk of Fame or whatever you want to call it. It was more meteoric with Jake Arrieta, but his level of great for that sustained period is as good as anybody's that you're going to talk about in Cubs history. That's not what I want to talk about, though. I want to talk about the reaction that Arrieta got. And I want to ask a question. I haven't asked Campy or Tony this in pre. I wanted to run it past them first. And I'll give my answer to this momentarily. Who's your favorite ex? Like, Arrieta came back, and he's clearly a lot of people's favorite. That's someone that you appreciate. Who's someone who left your team, and even though they left your team, you still root for them. Like, they are still someone that you give mad respect to for what it is that they had done or accomplished in your team's jersey.
That's the easy one, Rose.
D. Rose, yeah. For you? I mean, when Derrick Rose came back, like, that was a thing. When he came back after he had scored 50, was it 2 days later? I think he came back to Chicago, and you had fans chanting MVP. What did he give the Bulls, 28 that night?
Something like that.
And he's at the free throw line, and you had the fans, like, remembering what it was that Derrick Rose meant to them when things were good. Campy, you got a favorite X?
The one that I think of first is when Frank was hitting the home runs against the Sox.
Mm-hmm.
I was happy. I was happy for him.
I've got a bunch. There's a couple that one is playing now. One is pitching tonight in Jose Quintana. And I know I'm not alone in this because I've talked with White Sox fans about this. We saw what Quintana was and how him and Sale would go out there every fourth and fifth day and just give their hearts to the cause of the White Sox, a fruitless cause. And so we wanted them to win, and we kind of didn't care where they would go and win. Now, the Sale thing is a little bit more complicated because there were scissors and there was a LaRoche thing and all sorts of stuff. But with Quintana, even him getting traded to the Cubs, a lot of White Sox fans that I interact with are like, good for Q. We want the best for you, man. Go win. Go be in the playoffs because you damn sure weren't going to get there with us.
Thomas Jones is another one, partially because he got done dirty.
Yo, Thomas Jones is a lot of people's favorite bear. Because the team told you. The guys on the team were like, no, we already have a running back. Don't know why you used the fourth pick in the draft to draft another one. And a weird one. I'm sure, see, God, I wish I had the old vault, because in the old vault, this would be easy to find. Thomas, I actually have talked with Thomas about this on the air. He has a lot of regret about spending more time in Chicago. We'll try to book him again. We'll get him on the show soon. But the way that he interacts with Bears fans now, I think is great. It's so fun, and it's clear that he loved those few years that he was a Bear. And I think that people from the outside looked at it and was like, no, he was the people's champ. Cedric Benson was a draft pick, but Thomas Jones was the people's champ. And he was the champ of the guys in that locker room. And then he was kind of the heavyweight champ when he punched Cedric in the face.
And then Cedric was like a reverse Jeff Blauser. He started with the Bears and killed them, and then he went to the Bengals and killed the Bears.
Yeah, Cedric had an okay career. It wasn't worthy of the number 4 overall draft pick, but it was what did he go for, like 225 against the Bears as a Bengal?
And it was like 38 carries. They were like, you can get every touch you want.
Yeah, if you want these touches against the Bears defense, feel free.
Yeah, Cedric did all right.
Yeah, it's fine.
Just over 6,000 yards for a career.
Six G's. It's fine. What's that per carry average, though? About 3.7?
If that.
On a Cedric Benson? I mean, his rookie year wasn't bad. One could make the argument that a fully healthy Cedric Benson allows the Bears to win a Super Bowl.
With the Bengals, he was over 3.5 twice.
Oh, I see some good nominations here from people. Maglio Ordonez. Might want to check up on what Mags is doing right now, though. Matt Forte. It's good. Someone says, hell yes to Thomas Jones. Eddie Belfour. I was wondering if people were going to bring up a couple of hockey guys. I wonder if Chelios, because I feel like, okay, no one's watching, right? No one's listening. Like, we family, right? As Bernie Mac would say, we family. Isn't Chelios more Red Wing than Blackhawk? Like, if we're being honest, isn't he a little bit more Detroit Rock City than Chicago? Is it?
It's like him and Fisk are both kind of like those. Yeah, you claim them, but
they're not really yours. And I mean, I know you're from here, but it's kind of feels like he's more Red Wing than Blackhawk, in my opinion. Charles Tillman. Some people are throwing that out. Oh, the Greg Maddux one. That's heartbreaking. That one, that's a heartbreaking X right there. Because there was no reason for Greg Maddux to not have his whole career be in Chicago. No good reason, at least. Joakim Noah. Yeah, the Scottie Pippen one is heartbreaking, too. Like, seeing Scottie Pippen out in Portland was like, really?
I love those Blazers teams. That Blazers team was awesome.
Who else was on that squad?
Steve Smith.
Damon Stoudemire.
Zach
Randolph.
You got really early Rasheed Z-Bow.
Wallace.
Yeah, really early. Jermaine O'Neal rode the bench with that team.
Sabonis.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The that's, end of Sabonis was on that
my,
team.
That's my second favorite team of all time. So yeah.
Behind?
The We Believe Warriors. Let's go. Baron Davis. Monte
where,
Ellis.
Where are you from?
Chicago.
Okay. I mean, but we've talked about this before. Those teams didn't belong to you, so I get it.
Stacey Augmon was on that team. He came off the bench for that Blazers team.
Man, that's a hell of a roster that they put together
they
on that
Steve
squad.
Blake? No, I think no, Steve Blake was a little later.
I think Steve Blake was the next group of Blazers.
Brandon Murray group.
Jermaine O'Neal was on that team, too.
Wow. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good list that we've put together.
Well, oh, Bonzi, yes. Bonzi Wells.
Bonzi Wells was on that team, too.
If they could have just held that 15-point fourth-quarter lead.
847 Texas says Jamie Moyer, and I'm still going to go back to this. That man pitched for 25 years and doesn't have 3,000 strikeouts. How is that possible? This is not me being hyperbolic. He pitched for 25 years in the majors. And I think he had 2,400 strikeouts. Amazing. All right, we need to take a break. We come back. We'll talk a little bit more about this. I also want to throw something that I'm hearing. I can't confirm it, but I feel like it's been reported enough that as a talk show host, I feel comfortable talking about it. It has to do with a team that's banned on this team on this show.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll discuss it next here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Jimmy McBuckets. Jimmy B. The B stands for bucket.
Okay. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves and San Diego are tied at one game apiece in the Western Conference Finals. The Wolves return home Monday for Game 6 at Allstate Arena. Tickets start at just $15. For playoff and ticket information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2. Jeff Goodman of Stadium, the incredible basketball reporter, is going to join me at 1 o'clock. We are going to talk about all sorts of stuff, including what happened last night. But there is a story that's a little closer to home that I thought that we could discuss for a couple of minutes before that happens. Jimmy Butler's Instagram had him in Chicago. Jimmy's going to be a free agent, and he's going to get his choices of where to go. A couple of people have been reporting this. Look, if it were an actual, like, something report of, like, substance, I would dig deeper on it as a journalist. As a talk show host, I can tell you, supposedly, reportedly, Jimmy Butler and Jim Boylan had dinner. And some people have described it as Butler saying that he might want to come back here and play with the assembled young guys that the Bulls have on their roster. Tony's making the same face that I'm making right now, which is, no!
Hey, we good, fam.
Yes!
We good.
That is the correct answer, Tony.
You know what this is.
It's
the Bulls' new role as the Chicago Leverage.
I know someone.
Campy has been killing it today.
Yeah, Campy's on. He's on one today. But we need that. Someone tell Mitch, can we just make 100 Chicago left? No, I guess maybe I shouldn't put him in that
Jim
position.
Jim Boylan can talk about having leverage across the chest.
I shouldn't put Mitch in that position. I'm sure there's some independent person who would love to make us some Chicago leverage shirts that we could wear around just during the free agency period.
I just got a call from Mitch. He said his radio was static, so he didn't hear anything.
I bet he did not hear any of that.
He heard a lot about most of it, but what he did hear, he didn't hear any of
it. It's not his show, but he's sometimes on that show. Can you imagine, like, if we had Chicago leverage team, they would sell out. They would absolutely sell out. This is what we need to do. Someone get Cabana on the line and get us some Chicago leverage shirts.
I mean, the Kings are relevant again, so someone's got to take that mantle. And the Bulls are just the team to do it.
Could you? Okay, so here's the thing. Remember how in the last segment we were talking about exes? You know what Jimmy Butler is? He's your crazy ex. That you just, like, you parted ways and you're like, great. Now life can begin. The rest of them, you know, there's a, you go like, okay, this person did something for me. Like, I grew as a person because they were on my team. With Jimmy, it's like, no, it's probably a good idea that we never see each other again.
We good, ever. Fam. We good.
That's that. Am I wrong to feel that way? Am I wrong to go, this isn't what the Bulls need?
It would be the most on-brand thing they could possibly do. You trade away the guy partially because of money and partially because he was just a pain in the ass. And then a few years later, when you want to get right back to where you were when he left, you bring him back in the fold. Now, mind you, I have no expectation. A team that's better than the Bulls will offer him the max. But this is the thing. You use the Bulls. Even though they don't have the max money, they could. I'm sure if you expressed interest, they'd be willing to open up some max money. So that way, you go to the Nets, you go to the Sixers, and you say, "Hey, they're going to give me the full boat.
Wait,
bring it on home."
Wait. Doesn't Evan Altman make T-shirts? Evan could make us like a Chicago Leverage T-shirt. Make it black, white, and red. Only the Leverage. Only the Leverage. Only the one and only Chicago Leverage.
Boom, what would the boom, logo boom, boom, be?
Like a teeter totter. Like a seesaw. Couldn't we do that? Would that work? Like a seesaw?
So is it just like a pot of gold like weighing it down?
And or? Then the logo for the Leverage is at the top of the seesaw.
I'm just imagining the word leverage. Where the Bulls logo would be,
yeah.
Like in the Bulls lettering.
Jim Boylan wants people that really believe in the leverage across their chest.
Oh, my God. You know what? I know we're joking, but this is actually brilliant. Campy has come up with something that is tremendously brilliant. And we're all just going to be sad if Jimmy does come back here. I think that Tony said it best. We good, fam. We good.
If they're the Leverage, do all the numbers on the jerseys have to be like higher than the rest?
Sure.
So it has to be 50 and above?
Like, they have to have the greater than sign along with the number. Because you've got the Leverage on it. That's what we'd have to do. We could do a whole thing. Boys, we could do a whole thing on this. The Chicago. Look, I don't even want any money. I mean, I do. And Campy deserves some money because it's his idea. But even if you just come up with the prototype, man, we just like to wear the shirt and maybe give it to listeners. The Chicago Leverage. Bandwagon champs, come on. We're going to talk more serious basketball coming up in a minute with Jeff Goodman of Stadium. My name is Lawrence Holmes. You're listening to The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.